lines, you know, where something appears to be different than it actually is. You know, stationary lines appear to be moving, or lines of equal length appear to be unequal because of how they're staged and all that place, you know. All like, you know, something flat appears to be 3D, all those kind of things. Things are not always what they seem to be. You ever notice that? You know, not always what, you know, you can really, you know, sales is like that. It's not always what it seems to be. And sometimes you see that in these cases where they'll arrest somebody for doing something really horrible, and then they'll talk to all their friends and neighbors and go, yeah, he was the nicest guy, you know. You know, he was such a nice guy. He was so active with this, that, and the other, but he was a, you know, a real dirtbag. And you know, that's always sort of an ever-present reality. Things don't appear to be what they are. And Jesus tells this story today. In Luke 18, starting in verse 9. And it almost is that kind of a story. And it's like an optical illusion, that the things that you look at and you see, and you judge people by what you see, not what it turned out to be. And so I'm just going to read it. And unless somebody else would like to read it, it's in verse 9 to verse 14. Okay. It's interesting, the introduction to it, isn't it? That Jesus says to some who are confident in their own righteousness. Whew. He's, you know, a lot of times it says he was speaking to the crowd, or sometimes he's speaking to his disciples, and other times he's speaking, you know, here, man, this is specifically addressed message. He's speaking to those who are confident of their own righteousness. And that sounds almost cocky, but if you sort of look at it in terms of people, these are people that, because of what they did, they just thought they were in good standing with God, you know, and we're confident in that, and because of that, looked down on others, and did that. The setting is the temple, and he just tells the story of these two guys, and you can tell it's a parable, you know. When Jesus tells a parable, he just talks about this guy and this guy. When Jesus tells something that's real, he uses names. Thus, the story of Lazarus and the rich man was something that happened. This is a parable, you know. And he talks about, you know, first he talks about the Pharisee. And he's praying to God. Is he talking about God? He's not talking about God at all. He's talking about himself. You know, he's not praying to God. I mean, he was, you know, in talking about the temple courts, and a lot of times in these places in the temple, they would go up to pray. They weren't standing. They weren't, you know, they weren't like going up to the Wailing Wall now in Jerusalem, and you know, getting up against the wall and putting their little prayer in the crack and just sort of talking to themselves. When they were at the temple, it was very public. You went. You know, unless you were in the holy, if you got into past the court of the Gentiles women and got into the inner court of where the men were, there were places they would go and pray before God and around the altar. It was very public. You know, we think of prayer, you know, we do public prayer in church where we sort of gather together. And it was sort of like that, only much more free-flowing. You know, if you've ever been to a church where, you know, okay, let's pray, and everybody prays, but everybody prays aloud, it's almost that kind of a thing. You know, they were very vocal, and you know, just the whole groups of people would be standing around. They'd all be praying, and you know, it could be very loud and confusing if you didn't realize that, you know, each guy was praying to God on his own, but it was all out in the open. And so this guy is praying out in the open, but is he praying to God or is he praying to the crowd so everybody can hear? You know, it's a good question. And in that culture, you know, this guy obviously wasn't particularly concerned about going there and meeting God. You know, he's going to go there in front of all these people and under the guise of praying to God, lift him, exalt himself. And that's what he did, you know. And don't get me wrong, this guy did good things. You know, if you look at this, you know, the law had all these, you know, that he could, you know, fast on certain days. And, you know, and he did twice, he fasted twice a week, you know. And he, you know, when he says he tithed, he didn't just tithe a third of his harvest of his income. I mean, he did it, you know, he tithed his harvest, his side jobs, you know, he would go through, they would go through their cabinets and look at all of their, just imagine, ladies, all the spices you have in your cabinet, going through once or twice a year and taking 10% of each one of those spices you have in your cabinet and tithing that. You know, I mean, this guy, they you know, they did good things and they took the law to the extreme, but he gets there where he can meet God in the temple. And under the guise of talking to God, he's just talking about himself, you know. And, you know, I don't think he's particularly unique. I think there are people who just, you know, do that. And we all have to sort of be on guard against doing that. And that's something we need to see and understand about ourselves. And I think that's part of it. But and then, you know, the biggest problem was he compared himself to others. You know, he... standing there in front of all these people, praying aloud in front of all these people, and said, you know, God, you know, I stand before you and I tithe and I do all of this stuff, and I'm not like those guys, and they're evil, you know, I'm the tax collectors and the sinners, and, you know, and literally you get the sense that he, you know, I'm not like other men, and he, the way this is stated is like he would look at the tax collector and say, like, the you know, the evil people and these people and that guy, you know, he's almost being very specific. Not a robber, evildoers, or even a tax collector. So thieves and those who do evil, and worse than them was a tax collector. You know, now I don't know what you think of the IRS. I don't know if we could get but you remember in those days, those guys who collected taxes, they were given a set amount by the Romans to collect. And anything they collected above that, they kept. So they were taxing two or three times the amount needed, and they were getting rich off of their own people, and they were considered traitors. So there was, you know, a lot to all of that. I'm not a murderer. You know, I'm not a murderer or a rapist or, you know, a terrorist, and I've been faithful, and I don't think government how, and I'll feed on my taxes. And, you know, we a lot of times people defend themselves by what they don't do. And... and that's never a positive thing. It never ends up being a positive thing. And for him, it was just basically that self-righteousness, you know. And that self-righteousness is like a poison, like carbon monoxide. You know, it can be unrecognized. It can be deadly. And it can alienate people. You know, and Jesus is speaking specifically to a group of people, Pharisees, who had this characteristic. So everybody he was talking to, this group he was talking to, this is what they did. So, you know, he's telling the story, and he's telling the story of this guy praying, and they're all going, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's me. Oh, I like that. That's a good guy. He's a good guy, you know. And they're probably all saying that. But he wasn't the only one present. And it says the tax collector was there. The tax collector wasn't up standing on the platform. He was standing at a distance away. He wouldn't even look up into heaven. He wouldn't even put himself in the same place, wouldn't lift himself up to that point and, you know, look up to God and trumpet himself. He's you know, there, but back in the crowd, his head is bowed. He won't even look up. And you know, he's saying, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And he comes before God and he sees, recognizes God. And when you recognize God and you actually recognize God, you recognize your own sinfulness, and that's where he is. And the fact that the tax collector came to the temple is pretty amazing, because they knew everybody hated them. So he's coming into a place of open hostility toward him. And so we don't know if he was going through a crisis, or, you know, we don't know why he was there, but this would not be a place where he would be welcomed by everybody, because they all hated him, thought he was a traitor. But he's in the temple, but he's crying to God for mercy. And a lot of times people will go through their life, you know, nobody's perfect, you know, and none of us are. But instead of coming to God for mercy, we make excuses. Well, you know, that's just the way I am, you know. You know, I was born in, you know, and I, you know, I had a temper since I was, I've always had a temper, that's just the way I am. Well, you know, or, you know, you're talking about doing something and you're doing something that's not right. And, well, man's got to make a living, you know, it's okay. Or I'm not really hurting anybody, or you just don't understand the pressure I'm under. All kind of excuses to excuse our sinful behavior. And this guy has probably done that for a long time. But whatever driven him to the temple that day, all that is set aside, the excuses are gone. And he's just crying out to God for mercy. Okay. That's never a bad place to be. Never a bad place to be. And if Jesus had stopped the story right then, if he had stopped right there, all those people he was talking to would have gone, oh, yeah, I've been there. Yeah, I've been there. I've been there. I've been praying. I saw those guys, and they would have all just, oh, yeah, they're right with Jesus. They're just right with Jesus through all of this so far. They're just dealing with that so well. But that's not where the story ends. You know, it's like Par Harvey. You know, now for the rest of the story. You know, you know, I tell you that this guy, the tax collector, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. And again, he starts off with the idea, I tell you. But I tell you. Okay? That's different. He obviously knew he was saying something different than the crowd. The people he was talking to would just relate to the Pharisee. They were odds are they were Pharisees, and they would relate to, they just thought this was, hey, this is a great story. In fact, they were probably thinking, wow, Jesus is finally telling a story that's on our side. You know, finally he's saying something that's positive about us, because he never said anything positive about the Pharisees. And then he says, this guy didn't go home justified before God. The other guy did. And Jesus does that flip. The tax collector wasn't there for everybody to hear him pray. He wasn't there to tell everybody about all the things he did. He wasn't there for the applause of men. And yet, because he just came to God in humility, he was justified before the Lord. And he ends with this principle: everybody that exalts himself will be humbled. Everybody who humbles himself will be exalted. And one guy put it this way: you will never see God if you're captivated by the image you see in the mirror. that's pretty astute. That's pretty thought. You know, that's a good idea, good thought process. You know, another one person put it this way: you'll never see God in a practical sense until you realize that it's not you, that you're not God. You know, that it's not about you. That is the hardest lesson for any of us to learn, isn't it? It's the hardest lesson for, that's what you're trying to teach a child, trying to, you know, deal with McKinsey, you know, is, you know, it's, you know, this is, you know, she's getting to that stage where, you know, people go out of the family room and shut the door, and she wants to be out there, and she'll go to the door and pound on the door and then look at you and sit down and start crying because she can't go out. Okay, cry, go ahead, you know. Not about you, girl, you know, and the hardest lesson many of us learn is the fact that it isn't about us. We want it all to be about us, and, you know, And that when we humble ourselves before the Lord, even Timothy, Paul said, Christ came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am the worst. Paul would recognize that. And that's where this guy was. And Paul was pretty respected and applauded by the Christian community, but he didn't lift himself up. You know, he saw himself as the chief of all sinners because of the way he persecuted the church. So Jesus gives us this very simple story. And you got to think of his audience. They probably went from, oh yeah, he's finally telling a story that, you know, he finally tells it, he finally gets it right. Up until the last line, they're probably sitting there thinking, he's finally getting this right. Jesus finally gets us. You know, he finally gets us. And then they find out, yeah, he really did get you. But not in the way you think. He really did get them. You know, but he understood the reality of what they were doing. And not, you know, and I'm not advocating that we walk around saying, I'm no good, you know. And I'm not sure I'm advocate sometimes where the church just, you know, continues to beat up on Christians, you know, and then we're all sinners, we're all this evil, we're all just sinners, and we all go, okay, no, you come to Jesus, he gave you a new heart. You're now a child of God. You need to have a new identity. And if you don't have that new identity, if you're still beating yourself up because you're a sinner, you haven't bought into grace yet, and you need to buy into grace, and you can't be, you know, granted there's still sin in your life, and you need to be forgiven, you need to keep that current with God, but if you don't understand that he takes that old heart out and gives you a new heart, you know, it's hard to, you know, the idea isn't to continue to beat up on people in the church because they're evil. They aren't anymore. If Jesus gave them a new heart and forgave them, they're his children, and they're God's children and his brothers, and, you know, and they're the saints and the righteous, and all of that applies to them. You can't be both. So this isn't to say that we need to go around like the tax collector, just beating ourselves up because we're sinners and we're lost. We're not lost if we're in the church, if we're in Jesus. We're forgiven. We've been given a new heart, and we're children of God, and we are considered the saints of God. The idea isn't that we beat ourselves up. It's just that we live up to what we're supposed to be, live up to our name, and live up to the family, you know, supposed to have a family resemblance. You know, like you said, when you're showing that picture this morning, you know, there's Adam. It looks like Adam. You know, we're supposed to all look like Jesus, you know, in who we are, in our character, and in our behavior. And so we don't want to go around, you know, just, you know, not beating ourselves up because, you know, we're sinners and we're evil, and, you know, that has to stop. Because there's no victory in that. The victories in Jesus, and the victories in what Jesus did on the cross, and in his forgiveness. And we need to live in that victory and in that forgiveness. And, you know, but again, when all this takes place, Jesus hasn't died on the cross yet. You know, so all these people are still under the old covenant, and Jesus is just saying, hey, in their attitudes, when they came before God, their attitudes, one was about himself, the other was about God. The other was realizing he was needed grace, the other didn't think he needed anything. And he says, and no matter where you are, that's not a bad way to approach God. Realize when you come to God that it's not about us, it's about him, and he's God, and we just need, we receive his grace. And that's all the tax collector was asking for, was just grace. Yeah, being humble is, you know, seeing yourself the way God sees you, you know, and that's not lost anymore. But it's about God, you know. It's getting out of yourself and seeing others, and those who have that humility usually are servants who are serving others and taking care of others. And when they say positive things, they're trying to say positive. You know, they're lifting others up. Instead of self. So there's a whole side of that that people, you know, you're right. A lot of times people associate being humble with beating themselves up and saying how bad they are. That's not it. And that's the place where we, you know, need to get to that place to come to Jesus. But once we come to Jesus, that humility is just showing Jesus. You know, it's all about him and realizing that in how we live, and it's important. It's important to do that. It's important to understand that. And it's important to get to that point. One of the things I dearly love about this church that was from the very first time I walked in the door many, many years ago was the fact that there's no pretense here. You know, and I often talk to people about the church and say, yeah, you come to church, what you see is what you get. There's no pretense. Nobody's here pretending, and nobody's here performing. You know, because sometimes you get in a place where, you know, we're not really worshiping, we're just sort of performing. You know, in the sense that whether we're sitting in the pew singing, you know, or whatever we are, we're just there so everybody can see. You know, and we really don't have that. You know, we're not trying to earn points. We're not trying to come to worship. We come to worship, and we want to learn, and it's genuine, and that's the idea. The battle for spiritual sincerity and genuineness is something that we have to pursue, because the moment you try to pursue it, the enemy steps in. And we were talking to Eric and Christine last night, and we stopped to pray with them because they're going to be doing all this traveling. And Eric was talking to Kathy about what he and Christine are trying to do. And he says, and the moment you try to spend time, whether it's, you know, as a couple, you know, having just, you know, in their crazy life, they're just trying to find 20 minutes a day or 20 minutes, you know, where they can just be together and talk things out a little bit and be on the same page. I wasn't part of that conversation just at the end. He says, but the moment you try to do that, he says, like the moment they tried to set this up so that they would have this, you know, connection and every day, his company said, you know, for 1 week of the month, every month, you have to go to New Jersey. You know, it's like the enemy, there's this spiritual warfare. The enemy's going to do everything you can, everything he can, to keep you from being spiritually sincere and genuine, and to keep you from keeping those commitments to the Lord and doing all of that. Everything in the world is going to come in and seem to have a higher importance or greater importance, or to be a distraction or something. Yeah, it can be a good thing. It's not that it's all bad stuff. It can be a good thing. You know, you know, some people, you know, just so many times people, you know, like guys will pursue their career, which is a good thing, to provide for their family, which is a good thing, but they'll pursue it to such a degree that they're not home and they lose their family. You know, it's not that it was bad, it just wasn't there. It's sort of like if we focus our eyes on Christ, as it says in Hebrews, you know, focus your eyes on Christ, the author and perfecter of our faith. And the enemy Satan doesn't need you to be looking this way, opposite of Christ, and going that wrong direction. If he can get you off just one click or two, so that Christ is still in the picture, but your main thing is family, or children, or work, or service, even to the church, and it can be one click off. It's important stuff. It's stuff that has to have priority in your life. But if he can click you off Jesus to where Jesus is just part of the picture, instead of life being about Jesus and these things are part of the picture, the enemy wins. You know, because now what you're giving your life to isn't him. If you give your life to him, then he enables you to really take care of all of these things. But if you click that off just a degree or two, eventually, you know, that degree or two. I mean, I remember just the stories of the first two times they tried to land things on Mars, they crashed into the mountaintops, you know, and they couldn't figure out why. They had this figured out so precisely why, when the landers got there, instead of landing on the plains, it crashed into the mountains. Well, what they found out was that, you know, you had this one group working on the satellite and programming the satellite, and this other group working on another part of it. And what they found out was one was working with feet and yards, and the other was working with meters. Well, you know what the difference is between a yard and a meter? Is about what? This? But by the time you get to Mars, everything looked good until it got there, and then suddenly they realized that, you know, that 3 mile difference at that point puts you in a mountain instead of on the plane. And sometimes we'll get so, you know, particularly in our culture where, you know, what the children want is more important than worship and more important than anything else, you're off a click. It may be just one click. Children are important, you know. But if you're off that click, by the time you get further down the road, suddenly, you know, it's a Sunday morning, it's time to go worship, but, you know, I think we haven't taken the kids to the zoo in a long time. We just really need to, you know, have some fun with the kids. Okay, you're just, what are you communicating? What are you teaching? This is more important. And suddenly that click is a big difference. And that's all the enemy has to do, is just get you off a click, you know. And so we need to you know, just try and keep everything in that perspective, in that view of I'm serving Jesus and Jesus has given me the privilege of caring for my family and caring for my children. And my job isn't to make sure their lives are full of fun. My job isn't to make sure their lives are full of adventure. My job isn't to make sure their lives are full of learning. My job is to make sure their lives are full of Jesus. The other things will take care of themselves. Life is an adventure. It will happen. Your kids will have fun. They'll find a way. That's not your job, okay? You're not to entertain them, and you're definitely not to give in to them and let them determine the course of things. That's your job. Okay? And if you take care of them and bring them to Jesus, everything else can take care of itself. And that can be with your children. That can be sometimes it's some people get caught up in their stuff. And so, you know, come Sunday morning, it's more important to, you know, to mow the front yard because it's a half an inch taller than it's supposed to be than to be in church, worshiping the Lord. Well, I got to take care of this. Really? You know? So now you're teaching your kids that this thing, this place, this experience is more important. See? Doesn't take much to get off. Satan doesn't, you know, Satan never really is trying to get us to go like this. You just knock off a click or two. And we mess up. And so we have to make sure we're on track as best we can. And that's always a good thing also in the midst of all of that, if you really want to stay true, is to bring people with you. You know, you want to bring people along with you. Bring people along with you. Bring people, if you can, to church. Bring people along with you on that journey, you know. And because if this, you can rest assured, between the rich man, the Pharisee, and the tax collector, when they all got home, the tax collector talked about the grace he received and how wonderful God is, that he was forgiven. And the Pharisee talked about himself. Which is more attractive? Which is going to get more people in the temple? See? And we have the job of reproducing ourselves in Christ. So. Oh, yeah, you have to. I was sitting there talking to Joe, which is Heather's boyfriend, and he's working in Arizona, and we were talking about, you know, he's in this year of probation where he's doing 12, 15-hour days his first year, you know, and how tiring it is. And you know, he says, but they finally hired somebody new, so he's not in the bottom of the totem pole now. And so we got to talking about the fact that you need a Paul, a Barnabas, and a Timothy in your life. Someone who's mentoring you, someone who's going through this with you, and someone you can mentor. I said, and you need all three relationships. And so we were able to really have a good, you know, we need to be able to pass that on. So anyway, read through this passage in Luke 18. You know, it's like I say, it was very shocking. The Pharisees were going, oh, he finally gets us. Well, he got them all right. More than he thought. So. Let's pray we'll be in. And Jerry, it is so good to see you here. That's good. Everything got that taken care of. And we were praying for you a lot and your eye and everything. Father, thank you for being with us. So good to see Jerry here this morning and see how you worked through that surgery and all that stuff that was going on. And just ask your grace and praise as we gather for worship. And thank you for all that you're doing for us. In Jesus' name.